This is Strategy Taken, a podcast about hard decisions and how strategic leaders in financial services make them, with your host, Luis Sorzella.
Today, I'm very happy because we have my friend Eduardo Urdapilleta. Did I get this right?
Yes, I know it's long and difficult. He's Basque, by the way.
Eduardo is a very good friend of mine. He is a senior advisor and a senior executive with banks and financial services firms.
That's correct.
He is a former McKinsey partner, and he has been working on the topic of digital transformation in financial services and the use of analytics in business. He's an advisor for Maple Mark Bank. He works with the Transom Group, Citibank. Eduardo, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I think I butchered your introduction. So you want to talk a little bit about yourself?
Okay, let's spend that just 5 minutes on that. Don't like talking about myself so much. Yes, you did a good summary, actually. I studied here in California at UCLA, got my master's in economics. Before that, I was an engineer, then got my MBA. Worked for McKinsey for something like 8 years, mostly in the financial sector. And yes, I was a partner the last 3 years of these 8 years. So mostly, as I said, in the financial sector, in several regions. As you can see, I have an accent. So I worked a lot in Latin America, but also in Europe, in the US. Not so much in Canada, although I have a couple of projects in Toronto, but mostly the U.S. and Latin America and Europe. After that, I worked for the World Bank, then for Citibank, as you already mentioned, Access Bank here in California, and so on. And yes, I'm working with financial institutions all over the country, in Texas, in Florida, and here in California.
Eduardo, digital transformation and analytics is something that's been very topical for well over 10 years now, right?
Yes. It's already a dated concept. Yes.
Yes. So what is the current stage of digital transformation today?
Well, I think it's mixed. Most banks, and I'm going to focus on banks, but I think this also applies to retailers, consumer goods companies, etc., have already done the leap into digital transformation. That's quite obvious. The thing is that many of them have acquired tools, not always the best tools, and are doing things in a non-strategic way. Remember that strategy is a strategy and it's always important, no matter what type of endeavor you're taking. And also, data is very important. Data is available, but not always institutions have a good use of that data. They always ask for more data, but the data is there. It's the use of that data thing. Also, sometimes they focus too much on the tools and people are still important. Analysis is still important besides the tools, and you have to use the tools in the right way. So after 10 years, as you mentioned, the outcome is mixed. Now I'm optimistic of what's going to happen in the future.
Optimistic?
Yeah, I'm optimistic. Well, not about the economy. I was saying I'm optimistic about the improved use of tools, getting more into the essentials and not so much into the shiny object that is fashionable this week.
What is harder? Is it for banks to do the digital or is it for technology companies to do the banking?
That's a good question. I think both are hard. I would say if I have to choose, because I think both are hard. You have to choose is more difficult for technology companies. Now, there are several types of banks. We're putting, there are like more than 10,000 banks in the US, right? So we're putting everything on the same bucket, snapped. More traditional banks, on the good side, they have the money to do it, right? They are typically good at technology because they have been doing that for years. Now, the bad part for them is that is very difficult to change when you already have a big infrastructure in place. It takes years. You cannot just close all the branches one day to the next. And also change the internal culture of an institution with 100,000 employees. That's difficult too. On the technology side, the flip side of that, large banks are good at technologies, that large banks have a lot of legacy. Many of them here in the US have grown through acquisitions. That means that Bank A in Texas had certain technology, Bank B in New York had some other, Bank C in California had some other. They were already dealing with integrating all that, and transforming that into a digital bank is another challenge. For the attackers, which I will not call them technology company, I would say the fintechs that are mostly banks / fintechs, they don't have legacy. They don't have legacy in terms of infrastructure, and they don't have legacy in terms of technology. They have state-of-the-art technology just because they are starting. Also, they have the advantage that economies of scale, which has always been very important in banking, are diminishing as a factor because technology is more replicable and it's easier to grow. Now they have the disadvantage of gaining consumer trust. Now it's getting there. After the 2008 crisis, many big banks lost their name. The trust is building, but it's not there. Now you mentioned pure technology companies have another issue. When you look at banks, you think mostly on the lending side. Actually, banks, as we all know, I'm sure your audience knows, make money on the margin, right? Make money on getting cheap deposits and then lending them. The deposit side is much more complicated for a technology company. And also, particularly in the US, acquiring a fully fledged banking license, it's complicated. So they have the disadvantage of not being a bank, not being able to raise deposits, which they can with some limitations in some cases, but well, that's difficult for them.
I find that one of the challenges, I'm very curious to see how it plays out, is that like technology companies, most of them were established and grew on a certain market condition, right? Like of like low interest rates,
yes.
Deposits. It was important, but it wasn't as important as it is right now. And they've never seen anything other than this. And now market is changing, interest rates are changing. I'm curious to know how this is going to play out.
Well, I'm curious to know that too, right? It's not that I have the answer, but it's quite an important question, I guess. As you know, banks make more money with a higher interest rate environment because as interest rates grow, margins grow because lending rates grow at a faster pace than deposit rates. It's not bad for banks in the medium term that interest rates are rising. In the short term, you have asset and liability matching problems because most of your lending is fixed rate and your deposits are variable rate. But as this evolves, again, it's positive. For fintechs, yeah, it's another game altogether. I'm sorry for your listeners at your podcast. I don't have the answer. I think it's going to be a difficult trend. Now, there are different types of fintechs. There are fintechs that have specialized, mostly the early ones, in payments, for example. It's a fee-based business. So that's not so influenced by the rising interest rates. Fintechs that have specialized in some segments, because initially fintechs that's for a long conversation have specialized in horizontal parts of the value chain, like payments or wealth management, like the robo-advisors and so on. But then some fintechs have evolved and specialized in segments. If you specialize in some underserved segments like small business lending, I think you're better off because that's not so competed with large banks like if you specialize in traditional mass retail.
And I understand that this is at the core of the story that you have to tell us today.
Yes. I've been this is a case I think it's interesting in the sense of, again, the importance of plain old strategy and importance of good use of tools and good use of digital transformation overall. I was working for a bank, no, I'm not going to mention the name, but a medium-sized bank, which wanted to grow. And one avenue that they have found to grow was the high net worth individual segment. That segment in particular is the holy grail in banking. Everybody wants to be there because it's larger deposits, large margins, etc. A lot of that. But you don't always make money in what is shining. Sometimes you make money in things that actually don't shine. This bank wanted to go there. They were already in the process of doing that. And they have done some personas. First question is, I also do a lot of marketing. Many times working with marketing agencies, you do the personas based on the points of view of people in the bank and points of view of the marketing agency and so on. It's totally based on common sense. That, in this age, doing personas and particularly doing it that way is not of much use because, as I mentioned in the beginning, you have the data. You can do a micro segmentation and not just in terms of demographics, saying income, saying age and so on, but also in terms of behavior, how they relate to the bank, what type of activities they do, etc. You have all that data. Particularly as a bank, you have a lot of data about your customers. So why would you do an exercise that not based on data, but based on perceptions? We have passed that point in time. That's very 1990s, if you wish. But well, and then the segment itself was never analyzed in terms of profitability. And again, we have the data to analyze the profitability. I was not that profitable, particularly when you are a secondary bank. Most of these individuals will have several bank accounts. And if you are not the bank where most of the money is held, you don't really make much from them. And if you want to increase your presence, doing cross-sell, higher share of wallet, and so on, you have a hurdle because you have to look at not just what the market is, if it's interested in itself or not, but also, which is obvious, is plain old strategy, is what are your competitors? If there are several strong competitors, probably it's not the best. And what's your ability to win? In this case, this bank didn't have a clear brand name for that segment, didn't have a clear ability to win. So at most, what they got is his secondary accounts, less than 250K because of the FDIC insurance and so on. So, and there were a lot of efforts and not so much money coming. So one thing here is the who. Now there's a lot of data available of your own customers and also outside that you can analyze the profitability, taking into account these three things: the total addressable market, you know, the characteristics of the market, but also the competition and your own ability to win. And based on that, if I were to suggest this bank, which segment go, it would have been probably more small business owners where they have their own personal account and their business account at the same bank, and you can connect both of them, and they have a lot of transactions, you make fee-based business, and so on. So not only you should go to Holy Grail, in order to decide where to go, data is available, just use it. Then the second part, besides the who, is the how. Right now, most institutions have Salesforce or CRM or another CRM. They have Marketo or Eloqua for marketing automation. They have Google Analytics for analytics and so on. And the marketing departments, when they are launching this campaign to grow a particular segment, like in this case, depend too much on the platforms. And I think sometimes you have to step back and say, well, what are we doing? Why are we going to this segment? And you can do analysis on your own. Nothing replaces having good people who can do good analysis. There's no platform that, at least at this point, can do it all.
In this situation, I usually say that the reason why you see so many children trying to fit their square peg on the round hole is because the square peg is the one that they have on their hands.
Yes. Yes, yes. And in this case, using your example, it's also because the square is what everybody else has. So you take the square. You just copy what others are doing. I know that we are in the emergence of AI and machine learning, but, you know, I've been doing analytics all my life. Machine learning, at least in my point of view, is mostly running some regressions, then based on the results, you incorporate the data and you run it again. And then based on the results, you incorporate the new data and you run it again. So the machine, the computer, or the algorithm is learning. Could be regressions, could be another algorithm that's learning. It's just that. So again, is using data, which is available in a suitable way. I would recommend for any type of company, not just banks or financial institutions, that when you use all these tools, you also have to have people capable of using these tools and capable of going beyond the tools and thinking beyond of what's getting there. Continuing with this example as a wrap up, if you want. For example, we were doing a lot of social media to this segment. It happens that this segment don't use Instagram so much. And if they use Instagram, they don't decide their banking needs based on Instagram. And probably an all-time ad in a golf magazine would have better results. And then you run this in social and do Google Analytics. Problem is attribution. Because a problem is what you are measuring. First, what you are measuring. Because if you measure impressions or if you measure clicks, yeah, sure, but how many conversions you got? In the end, that's what matters, right? So in the end, it's results that matter. And then attribution. Say you have conversions, but using the same example, maybe this person saw our ad in a golf magazine, then talked to a friend, a referral, and then went online and clicked. But you attribute it to the click, and it's not really that, but converted it.
So let me try to summarize this. You had two big problems. One, you refer to it as the hole, which is that you had personas, but they had no data and facts behind them.
Yeah.
They also did not take into account how profitable or whether your bank was a primary relationship bank or not. And it did not take into consideration whether you have a competitive advantage with those.
Exactly.
Is why you were focusing on high net worth, but had no facts behind that. And the second problem is what you refer to as the how, which is that you were over depending on doing what everybody else was doing because of the tools that were available. And you had a hard time truly understanding what is the marginal contribution of which one of the efforts that you were making.
That's a good summary, Chris.
Thank you.
Which I would further summarize in terms of data is there, tools are there, but you still need strategy and you still need people.
Tell me a little bit about what was at stake.
It was a mid-sized bank kind of trapped in the middle. We were mentioning the really big banks have scale, have possibilities, etc. The smaller banks, because they are small and they are coming anew, new technology, new ways of doing business, are also growing. The banks in the middle are the ones who have the biggest problem. And that also translates in, for example, retailing, in other industries. The ones in the middle are always the ones who have, and this was a bank in the middle. So they needed to find new avenues of growth to survive in the long term. And the market, obviously, I mean, Wall Street was asking them to.
All right. So what did you do?
Then we switched to a different segment with much better results, which was small business owners.
I can imagine that switching, it wasn't as easy as just saying, let's just switch to be small business owners.
Yes, it was not. But it happened. Now, it lasted a year, probably, a year of trial and error in the high net worth segment. We didn't actually abandon the high net worth segment. There were still people working on that. It doesn't happen that way, you know, but you don't put so much effort. And we began progressively putting more effort in an adjacent segment, which is small business owners, because most of them are not high net worth, but are affluent.
Mm-hmm.
A level below. It's not the mass man. And first addressing them as the personal account. So that's related to the original effort. You know, instead of being high net worth, these are affluents, but it's also personal accounts, similar type of effort. And then going for the business accounts, which in the end, at least for this bank, and of course depends a lot on the institution, the capabilities of the institution, the market it is, etc., was the most profitable because the business accounts meant a lot of fee-based business.
All right. So that was the switch on the solution for the who problem that you described. So what did you do regarding the how problem?
We have not solved it. I'm not working with this bank right now. This been a few years. But we didn't, to be honest, we didn't completely solve it. We did more offline things, particularly for small businesses, going to events and engaging with associations, which are off online combination of both things. But we were still doing a lot of Instagram.
Mm-hmm. So Eduardo, if you look back at this process, and if you were starting this again, what did you do that you would do again? What did you do that you wouldn't do again? You would do differently.
Let me begin with the different. What I would do differently is, okay, let's stop for 4 weeks and really decide what segment we want to go. And not just, as I mentioned, not just based on the size of the market, also mentioned the competitive intensity, mentioned on your ability to win, based on a combination of factors. Let's take a few weeks and analyze that. Analyze data. Data, your internal data, because you already have some clients on this segment in your bank. And also external data. That's available. Right now, data is available. That would be the first point. The second point would be to better understand how to win in this segment instead of just going to the desk, use the typical tools I was mentioning, and just address it. That's basically what I would change from the process, taking a step back in the beginning.
This sounds easier said than actually doing.
Yes.
Because you have a lot of teams who are already halfway through projects.
Really stop. In reality, Luis, you don't really stop, but you take some time aside for around 4 weeks, just to think. Now, you don't think on the process and you don't think on the segment 100% of your time, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I said you take some time aside, you still have business as usual going. And you continue with the initiatives you had prior to that. So both things are not contradictory. I'm sorry if I sound like too black and white. Things are not black and white in real life. I've been there. I've been around for a while, as you can see. So
the bank, no. Medium-sized bank, needed to do a transformation to survive. Don't have all the mm-hmm. resources. They have a problem with the segment that they wanted to focus on and how they were using tools and data to do business. And in the end, the solution ended up with deprioritizing the original segment that you were pursuing and be more top-down and more strategic about how you use your data, how you use your tools based on what you want to achieve, not based on what everybody else is doing.
Yes. As a summary, it's good. Now, there's a lot of complexity to that, right? As you know, right? Prioritizing the segment takes time and takes a lot of convincing, takes a lot of analysis, using this tool or using this other tool or not using a tool, just doing analysis in your computer takes a lot of time to convincing, doing it, etc. But yes, as a summary, I think it's a good summary.
No, I appreciate the complexity and the challenge of doing this. Kudos to you leading a process with the bank.
Thank you.
Eduardo, thank you very much for being here. It was a very interesting story. If anyone would like to learn more about this or get in touch with you, again, you're an advisor to banks. If anyone also wants to discuss with you your services, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, there are two easy ways. One is through LinkedIn. My name is Eduardo Urdapilleta. I know it's long and difficult, but I guess you can write it in the screen.
Eduardo Urdapilleta will be on the title of this episode.
Okay. So just search for my name in LinkedIn. There's only one. You know, the flip side of having a difficult name is that there's only one, Eduardo Urdapilleta. And the other way would be just by email. You can use my Gmail for this. Is E as Eduardo, M as Martin, my middle name, and then my last name. So it's Emurdapilleta or Emurdapilleta at gmail.com.
Fantastic. Thank you, Eduardo.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you are open to knowing more, you can subscribe to our podcast and find us on thestrategytaken.com.